back to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin, a podcast that features in-depth conversations with the people shaping Androscoggin County. We share personal stories that connect local leadership to the broader themes of economic development, community vitality, and quality of life. I'm your host, Shanna Cox, President and CEO of the LA Metro Chamber, and I'm joined by our producer, local talent, and longtime friend, Mr. Mark Turcotte.
Hello.
Welcome back.
How are you?
Thanks for joining us for another episode.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. We are not alone in the room today. Today's guest is someone who has spent her entire career advocating for the well-being of animals, and in doing so, strengthening communities at every level. So welcome, Katie Lisnick.
Thank you for having me.
We're super excited.
Oh, me too.
We'll dig into all of the animals in my house that you are in some way responsible for later in this episode.
Same.
we'll commiserate and share our gratitude because they're life-changing family members, right?
Yes.
So Katie is the executive director of the Greater Androscoggin Humane Society, a role she's held since 2018 with more than 25 years of experience in animal welfare. I'm sitting across from her. She looks like maybe she's 25.
Oh,
I think all of
sweet.
This is, I think it's lies.
It's all a lie.
25 years. When I saw that, I was just like, is that, did you start when you were five? Are we counting your early career?
High school.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Well, that does make me feel a little bit that, and we'll trade secrets on like best used moisturizer later because something is working.
Yeah. Thank you.
25 years, though, in animal welfare. Your impact stretches from local shelters in Maine to national policy arenas. Prior to joining Greater Androscoggin Humane Society, she served as the National Director of Companion Animal Public Policy at the Humane Society of the United States, where she worked on legislative advocacy, shelter programs, and cat protection strategies across the whole country. Mm-hmm. A Maine native, Katie has also served as an animal control officer. Shout out to my stepfather, who's an animal control officer. Really great field.
It's a great field. It's a tough job.
It's a very tough job.
It is.
It's kind of a heartbreaking job.
It can be.
And sometimes you end up with surprise guests.
Yes.
And sometimes they're cute and cuddly, and sometimes they're skunks.
Sometimes, yes. Yes, sometimes they're very
just
unexpected.
Shout out to Bob. Loving him and the work that he spent years doing. So in addition to that, a veterinary tech and a program coordinator at another Maine shelter, places where you gain hands-on experience in nearly every facet of the field, literally, from policy to caretaking. You hold a bachelor's degree in animal science from the University of Vermont and a master's of science in animals and public policy from Tufts Veterinary School. Beyond your role, you are deeply involved in statewide animal welfare efforts. She's past president of the New England Federation of Humane Societies, current chair of the Animal Welfare Advisory Council for the Governor of Maine, a long-serving board member of the Maine Federation of Humane Societies, and a former member of the State of Maine Animal Response Team. That's a lot. Today, we're going to explore how Katie's passion for animal welfare intersects with public policy, community health, and regional economic development, and how humane societies are just much more than shelters. They're vital community hubs. We're so glad to have you here. That is an incredible resume, and I've known you years, and you're lovely and approachable and wise and passionate about your work. You are also ridiculously skilled, connected to national work, and I'm just going to say understated about all of those things. That's an incredible history.
It's very, to me, I feel being able to draw on different experiences and just knowing, having that perspective nationally has really helped in the current role that I have. Because you can pull the best and the, you know, the newest and the interesting ideas that are going to work here. And you don't need to just kind of get stuck in the same old thing that you've always been doing. So it's been really helpful to have that perspective.
It's a really, again, understated way of putting it. I think, well, so one of the things that has been kind of a theme in our guests that I always just love, and they tend to not talk about, but we have incredible leaders doing incredible work nationally who just like go about their day and their day-to-day work here in Androscoggin County and don't toot their own horn. Don't, and I go into plenty of rooms where folks will be the first to tell you all of the highlights of their resume, and they don't tend to live or work here. I'll just like very honestly, and you know, there's something about that. So I shouldn't have been surprised. to read this resume, but holy, what a history.
It's 25 years of, I started out in high school working at a shelter, animal care directly.
And where? Just, give me some geography to
down
the story.
In Southern Maine, down at Animal Welfare Society in Kennebunk.
Yeah.
I grew up in Waterboro. I'm a native York County gal. And then did a brief stint in Vermont, lived there for a while. That's actually where I was animal control. And while I was at University of Vermont.
Big skunk territory out there.
Absolutely. Lots of wildlife. Lived in Massachusetts when I went down to Tufts Vet School and then came back and have been here ever since.
That's incredible. Thanks for coming back.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I enjoyed Vermont. It's a great state, but it just wasn't home. Yeah.
I'm so grateful that the pull of home makes sure we retain incredible people, bring them back. Mm-hmm. We'll start with our first kind of light touch, getting to know you segment. Yes, there. Would you like some water?
Getting to Know You is a segment where we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help you learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level before we get into the deeper questions. This is like the appetizer before the main course.
So let's start with an easy one.
Okay.
I chuckle because I don't know that this will actually be easy for you. Are you a dog or cat person?
Cat person.
Ooh, no, thank you. I was ready for, like, other animals to be introduced.
No, I'm absolutely a cat person.
Follow up. How many animals in your home?
5 cats.
Cat person.
Cat person.
Cat person.
How many in your office?
There we go.
1 cat.
1 cat, okay.
In the office, not the shelter.
In the office at the shelter, yes. Yeah. Although I do at home have 1 cat in the home office because she does not get along with the other cats.
Gotcha.
So she's an office cat.
Is she one of the 5 or did we just bump it to 6?
No, she's one of the 5. Okay. Yeah, she's one of the 5.
And your office cat at work.
Yes.
Is your office cat. Not up for adoption.
He is up for adoption. We always have, so I timeshare an office with our operations manager. The shelter is at a space premium.
Yeah. Was a very nice way to say crowded.
If you visit us, you will
My
see.
My office is also at a space premium. Thank you so much. I'm going to use that language a lot.
Yes, absolutely. Every day I'm like, this is
premium.
This is interesting. Okay. So he and I share an office. So when I'm there, he's not, typically vice versa. But we always have an adoptable cat in the office, just a cat that needs a little bit more space or needs a quieter environment to do okay at the shelter. So Mr. Christmas is our current office cat.
Mr. Christmas.
Yes. He is a very sweet older boy, and he's enjoying the office.
Does he kerplunk on your keyboard when you're
he
typing?
He does.
That's the mental picture I was hoping for.
He does. He knows exactly. He lays next to it, but then he just keeps moving his head closer and closer onto it. And then flicking his tail and knocking all my papers off.
See, so here's one of the things that I actually loved about the pandemic. So I had a colleague, very serious man, right? Probably in his late 50s, early 60s, very like serious guy. Mm-hmm. We moved to the COVID emergency Zoom surprise environment where people are taking calls from wherever and they're not sure how long it's going to last. And we don't have home offices. And this very serious man has this big cat who was attracted to Zoom. Apparently the cat was not friendly at other times and would kerplunk on his chest and then bat his face with the tail for the entire longevity of the call. And there was no way, like we could no longer be like, you're not actually that. Like you're not grumpy, you're not. It was my favorite.
That's adorable.
And this is why you're a cat person, right?
Yeah.
He must have been too, because he was not perturbed at all.
No.
He was very used to this.
They each have their own little foibles, and they do their thing, and they're endlessly fascinating and amusing.
Love to Mr. Christmas, then. That's fun. When you're not working or volunteering, what's your go-to way to recharge?
Getting out in nature in some way, hiking, just walking, just being outside, or reading.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
The quiet, specifically gardening
quiet activities.
And less arduous activities like hiking.
Outside's
nice.
Yeah, being outside, taking advantage of when it's nice out and just getting that sun and getting that fresh air. But reading is always one of my favorites.
I love a good escape. Do you walk any of your cats on these outside excursions?
No, they're all indoor cats, yeah. Although I've been exploring possibilities of putting on a catio.
Yes.
To give them that fresh air and that outside experience while not letting them roam. We have a lot of neighborhood cats that roam around in the area, mine wouldn't.
Same. We've looked at some of the, like, harnesses, mm-hmm. fully secured.
Yep.
Outdoor walking experience, mm-hmm. and I have to say we've landed nowhere that makes us feel secure.
Yeah.
Cats are really wiggly little guys.
They are, yeah. And it gets them used to going out and viewing that door as I want to go out to have fun.
Oh, good point.
And I would worry that they're going to try to escape when their harness and leash is not on.
I'm going to revisit this conversation at dinner tonight, mm-hmm. as I express my concern of what the solution looks like.
The catio, I mean, I want to do a catio that I can be out in as well. So it wouldn't just be the cat space. It would be, you know, more like an enclosed porch where it's comfortable for them, but also I can go out and enjoy the fresh air and be with them.
What you really mean is cuddle with cats while reading a book.
Yes. Yes. Outside as opposed to inside, which
absolutely.
Is what I do
absolutely.
In my spare time anyway.
I can picture that.
Yeah.
Much success, I hope, on your catio experience.
Wonderful.
With all the animals, activities, volunteers, and people in and out, where space is a premium, as mm-hmm. we'll say, what is your go-to way to keeping chaos at bay?
Some days you just have to kind of go with it.
That's a great answer. I don't keep it at bay. I just let myself be in it.
Some days I think being able to communicate and be aware of what is okay to let go in that moment and say, you don't need, okay, that can wait. And the more you try to control it, the worse it seems.
Yeah.
Cause then you're like just adding that pressure to yourself.
Yeah. And it's palpable for others.
Mm-hmm, it is.
This is the challenge of leading, is I think oftentimes it feels like we're supposed to look like we have it all together.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow it is our chaos to control and that we can,
mm-hmm.
which just is false.
Right, right.
It's just not possible.
No, there's no magic wand here.
No. Mm-hmm. No. I appreciate that. Let's get to the main course, shall we? Katie, your career has spanned from boots on the ground shelter work to influencing national policies that protect animals and support humane communities. So let's talk about your professional journey a little bit more, some of the leadership lessons and your evolving role within humane societies. What first drew you into animal welfare, and how has your leadership within that evolved over the years, particularly knowing it started in high school?
I've been asked this before, and I don't really have a good answer apart from I just could never imagine doing anything else.
So did it
just
start when you were four
animal? Tiny. Or? I mean, I've had cats and dogs, dogs as well, ever since I was a baby. Grew up with them. They just always were central to me and in my life, and it just was sort of a natural evolution. When I was 11, I gave up eating meat.
It's been all consuming, life.
in some way, shape, or form.
I would reflect back to you that I think that's actually a great answer.
I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
I love that. So for you, it's not a career, it's a calling.
Mm-hmm.
That
Absolutely.
Resonates with me.
Absolutely.
Oh, that makes me happy. How have you changed over those years? How has your leadership changed?
I think I've gotten much more tolerant of and less wedded to the outcomes that I want, which, is sometimes difficult. You want, mm-hmm. you see where things can go and you really want to get there. Sometimes that's not the right outcome for your organization, for your team, for whatever. And being open to those other ideas and just willing to kind of take those and synthesize those and see if something can come of it that will be even better than the original.
Yeah.
And it often is getting those voices. So being able to relax in chaos and not be... Again,
oh, you didn't start out that way?
No, I did not start out that way. And it's funny, I would say probably the biggest change that other people would say about me, and I didn't really ever view myself this way, but was very, very introverted, very shy in high school. Kind of had, I would have loved to have gotten involved in drama or, things like that, and I was just like, ooh, I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's gone.
Good.
So... So that was an evolution.
In a theater production?
Not professionally, not locally, although I would like to get involved with the
CLT.
Absolutely. But we do little sketches and videos at the shelter all the time. And I'm perfectly happy to make a total fool of myself. I love being a mascot. You know, things that I just never would have thought when I was little that I would do. Or people that wouldn't have thought that I would do. And now I enjoy it very much.
Do you feel like there was a time when you realized that had shifted or was shifting?
I think it definitely shifted much more being here, just because oftentimes there was no one else to do it. So you just were, you sink or swim. You go out and you grasp it.
It's
what, you just got to get it done. And then I found that I really enjoyed it.
I love that. So Community Little Theater is regularly doing auditions, and you can find Becca, our director of marketing, and Sam, our director of engagement, both are connected to CLT.
Okay.
And well, engage heavily. Don't hesitate.
I will ask them about their experience.
They love it. And there's lots of different ways to engage. So you could dip your toe in and then figure out what role, assigned role in a play, but what kind of active role in the theater, because there's so many opportunities.
Part of it.
I could see you both loving that and being amazing at it.
I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I've thought about getting involved with even helping with like costuming.
Yeah.
Because I love making costumes, so.
Yeah. Mm. Are you behind your mascot costume?
No, those were before my time, and they've held up incredibly well. I like to make different. I'm a big steampunk fan, so I make a lot of steampunk costumes.
That's fun. Mm-hmm. So you should definitely connect with Becca. Okay. And she has done puppets for some of the shows.
Interesting.
Which is kind of like costumes on a whole other level.
Yeah.
You have to make the inside and the outside, I think.
Right. Wow. Well, the whole mechanism of how they move.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's fascinating. I definitely will talk with her.
She would love that. Yeah. Sphinx or no.
Okay, right. Whether I can find a Sphinx cat for her or not, she still will. She'll still talk to me.
She absolutely. Maybe just in hopes that one day one will open up. But that's fine. Right. We don't have to think about that. So this question, I'm really excited to hear your answer to. We often are focusing on issues, opportunities, perceptions of our region that happen where things intersect. Mm-hmm. And your whole career has been around those intersections. And so often animal welfare intersects with broader community issues like housing and health and economic stability. How do you see those connections play out in your work and kind of locally?
It's not a separation. Mm. It's the entire role of our organization. We can't help animals without people.
Yeah.
And that's on our staff side, our volunteers, our board, our foster families, But the people, ultimately, who are adopting, the people who are donating, the people who are surrendering, the people who are in need, we can't do it without people.
Yeah.
We're not operating in a vacuum. So everything we do, all of our programs, all of the drivers of why we're there, why animals are coming to us, there are human challenges that are connected to those. The animal's not just wandering in itself saying, hey, I need help.
Right.
There's someone behind them that is saying, I can't do this, or I need something to give in order to keep this animal in the home. And so a lot of our programs are sometimes slowly, sometimes quickly, changing and evolving to put that family unit at the center and making sure that we're addressing the human concerns to the extent we can.
Yeah.
Our mission is to protect animals.
Right.
But we can't do that without also engaging proactively and humanely with people in our community as well.
Of the 25 years, how long or how prior to this role, what other experiences have you had in that type of environment, right? Because I picture some of your policy work while being about people. There's always, and I've done a lot of policy work, there's always this kind of like, you have to be really intentional when doing policy work to stay connected to the people whom are impacted by, will benefit from the policies you do. Whereas now you might have a foot on kind of both sides of that real estate. But I guess what I'm really interested in is, like, what are the trends that you've seen in community or economy? I think about when, I mean, I think about 2008, when mm-hmm. people were losing their homes because mm-hmm. of the foreclosure crisis, and people were losing their jobs, even if they were able to stay in their homes, and how those kinds of moments in society, you see those mm-hmm. and what are the impacts that you see in those moments?
Yeah, our trends follow
right.
greater societal trends. So right now we're seeing, you know, I would say about over half of our owner surrenders that are coming into us last year and this year is continuing the trend are because of housing challenges.
Yeah.
So it may be that they're getting evicted. It may be, you know, their rental unit property sold and now rents are increasing. They can't afford it anymore. They can't find a place to live that allows them to have their animals. Or it just is something, you know, they have to move and the pet policy is one cat, not three.
Yeah.
Or a 40-pound dog or less, not a 60-pound dog.
Yeah.
And we're getting, it's a very large portion coming in. The other trend is veterinary care. People not being able to afford veterinary care and making the decision to, rather than not provide for that animal and take care of the medical concern that they have, they're bringing the animal to us, which is challenging in that
coming with a whole set of needs beyond feeding, right?
And we then have to provide that medical care, which we might get a little bit of a deal from many local vet clinics, but not to, you know, to the extent that's going to make it incredibly
You don't have viable. A just vet on staff who does all the stuff.
She can't do all the stuff.
Right.
Her focus is spay neuter, which is a big need in the community.
Sure.
And we're trying to address that as much as we can. Monthly vaccine clinics that we provide. Mm-hmm. And then she's also responsible for all of the shelter animal care. So there's things that, you know, right now we've got a couple of dogs that have cherry eye, which is sort of like the interior of the tear duct is starting to come out.
Oh.
And it requires a surgery to tuck it back in, you know, do some sutures and make sure that the tear ducts are still going to function and all that. And she doesn't, that's not her expertise.
Right.
You know, she's a shelter vet. She doesn't do the fancier surgeries,
right.
for lack of a better term.
I mean, a eye cherry and repair does feel like a fancy surgery.
A fancy surgery, yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, like...
Not I'll buy that hands down.
You know, it's not orthopedic surgery or something
right.
like that. But so we rely on specialists as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're having to utilize a whole host of other veterinary clinics in the area. And they're all very kind to us, but they've got their own businesses and, you know, they don't always have time for another procedure.
Well, and as a two-pet household, I can tell you... The second pet was only able to get in with our vet because we were already a household on their list.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just affording, it is finding mm-hmm. and
finding
accessing
mm-hmm.
veterinary care, which mm-hmm. it feels like it's getting more challenging. And
it
my
is.
Vet, I guess luckily, I don't know if that's the right word, but you know, we have a dog and a cat, and if we had more exotic animals, the care of exotic animals are harder and
mm-hmm.
harder and harder. To find. My vet
mm-hmm.
doesn't have like that vet left, retired.
Yep.
There is no one with that expertise.
Mm-hmm.
That's challenging.
It makes it extra challenging. You know, we get small animals at the shelter. It's not just dogs and cats. We have rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, gerbils, mice, rats, ferrets, hedgehogs. You know, it's not
cute.
Consistent, but they come in pretty regularly. And Dr. Perret can do spays and neuters on rabbits, and we do. But
as the adage goes, that's the one you should.
Those
right?
are the ones we definitely should. We want to stay ahead of that. But yeah, her expertise is not small animals.
Right.
So we're, again, put into the situation of trying to find a veterinarian who's comfortable with that. And a lot of them aren't.
What is the most unusual animal? I was going to say wild, but I feel like in this context, I don't mean like a vulture.
No.
See, although it could be.
We have really good relationships with rescues and other nonprofits that will handle the animals that we're not equipped to care for. Yeah. So, like, we work with Herp Haven. Any reptile, amphibian, you know, those sort of calls, we're going to route them directly to them. And Avian Haven, we, you know, any sort of wildlife calls that are birds, we're calling them. Misfits Rehab, which is local, if we're getting calls about wildlife, so that we're not being put into a situation where we're taking an animal that yeah. we're not equipped to care for, because they need specialized care.
Do you usually get the courtesy call beforehand, or have you ever had one of those just walk in?
Oh, they walk in.
Yeah.
They do. Yep, they do.
I can just imagine a fun day at your office looks a lot different than a fun day at my office.
We've had injured birds come in boxes. Yeah, different types of wildlife come in. Mm-hmm, absolutely.
You know what? I would like to own and then maybe give you an opportunity so that this can become a learning moment and not just a confession. that when people ask, whether it's in Facebook social groups or, but I've been guilty too, that when folks say, here's my scenario, something, something obscure, mm-hmm. animal included, something, something, I need help. Regardless of any of the context, including what type of animal, I always say to start with you. Mm-hmm. So there are other options.
There are.
Where might we start in a different, like we should start with a phone call maybe?
Yeah, I mean, we're always happy to answer a question.
You are.
You know, absolutely.
And your whole staff, by the way.
And the staff.
All incredible.
Right. And the website. On our, we have kind of like a pet resource page.
On what's your domain?
And gahumane.org.
Thank you.
Or you can also go to savingpetsinmaine.org if that's easier to remember. But there's a pet resource page, and we list out information for those other entities.
Kind of like a flow chart.
Yeah, something, you know.
Your
if you're
animal,
finding a
wild
bird,
animal.
Give these folks
scales?
A shout. Right, right, right. If it lives in water, we, you know,
yeah.
that's not us. Yeah, so we try to provide that information as much as we can just to point people in the right direction.
That's incredible.
Sometimes we get folks coming in with very, very, very specific requests and breeds that we just typically do not see. It happens on occasion.
Right.
You know, especially for some of the dog breeds, you know, once in a while we'll get whatever it is that they're looking for, but it is much more rare. But
attitude forward,
you know, orange male that's on the large side. We almost always have. We got one right now. I think his name's Chico. I have one in my house, actually. He's my most recent addition.
Orange cats are their own thing, huh?
Oh, my goodness. I had never had one before, and he's proving all of the reputation that they have.
My son had done his research, and he wanted a cat with a big personality and... Moose has delivered as requested.
Yeah.
As social media listens to you, you have conversations. Your phone's probably tracking us right now. You're just
going
to get nothing but orange cat videos.
Orange cats.
For the next week.
Yep.
That's what happened is to us. And
They're
a brethren. There is a whole. Mark, have you ever had an orange cat?
I never.
A big fat orange cat.
I'm a dog
like a Garfield.
Guy.
I mean,
they're
the Garfields. They are.
There's the stereotype for a reason, and I don't usually buy into stereotypes, but I can verify at this point.
Yeah, me too.
And I love him for it.
Yep. Yep.
Most
I was skeptical. I was like, yeah, no, I'm sure they're not that bad.
And they really are.
They are.
Bad in an enjoyable way.
Yes. Entertaining.
Yes.
And yeah, they are.
Tell me a little bit about what some of the biggest challenges are facing animal welfare in Maine. Right now, I know you've touched on housing, and that might be the case. And how might addressing some of those challenges that are contributing to what you're seeing strengthen our communities too?
I think certainly housing, veterinary care, just the access to care, whether it's cost or, like you said, just physically being able to find a veterinarian who can take you on and your animals. I would say we're also seeing a decrease in adoptions as people have more economic uncertainty.
Yeah.
Because it is expensive.
Yeah.
You're taking on the food. You're taking on meds if they're needing medical care, you know, the veterinary care, cleaning up after them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, if you're really gonna give them everything they need, you're taking on a big responsibility, and people are being thoughtful about it, which is good.
Yeah, it's good on the back end for you.
You know,
like future you, it's good.
Future, you know, people are being responsible about thinking, can I really do this or not? But we've got animals that need homes.
Yeah.
And if they're not leaving, we can't take in more who need to come into us.
Yeah.
So it creates this stagnation of animals just sitting there and not moving out. And there's only so many, you know, rescues, and all of the shelters in Maine are pretty good about communicating with each other. If we have a, you know, say we get a beagle, which we have a harder time adopting here just because there's a lot of apartments and beagles tend to be loud. And
they really do.
They do. Yeah. So we might consider, hey, you know, Bangor Humane, can we do a swap? You know, you take our beagle, we'll take your
apartment-sized dog.
Yeah, exactly. And that's worked really well. But right now we're kind of all in the same boat where we're seeing that stagnation and longer length of stay in the shelters, which is difficult because then the animals start to get sick or stressed or start to get institutionalized and can't adjust back out into the, you know, into the normal home environment. So it's definitely something that is on our radar screen and we're trying to, but there's only so much we have control over.
Yeah.
You know, the economy is a little outside of our scope of everything, but you know.
Well, maybe some of those people are listening. If you had a magic policy wand with all of your policy thinking, what are maybe two policy areas that could actually start to address some of those issues?
I think one of them would be making it so that all of the rental properties are pet, kind of what we call pet inclusive. So it's not a hard and fast no pets or a, you know, one cat or a dog that's 20 pounds or less. It's much more, hey, you seem like a really great tenant. You've got two cats. We're going to work with you on that. Or, yep, you know, you're coming with your vet references and prior landlord, but you've got a 60-pound dog. We're going to make, you know, we're going to try it. You know, being that flexibility so that these animals can stay with their families.
Yeah.
And you're not facing, you know, people thinking they're going to be unhoused because they can't bring their pets with them. And we've heard that that's happening.
Oh, 100%.
You know, people are just, there. It's not a
true animal
situation
lovers.
That they're going to give up their animals.
Exactly.
Simply because in the short term, they can't find a place. They're going to find something.
Yeah.
Whether or not we would say that's ideal for them, it's not ideal for them or the animals, but they're staying together.
Yeah.
But we want to try to support that and help those folks as best we can.
Do you have a second policy wish list item? Magic wand style?
Oh my goodness.
Mine would be about a policy that created more vets and vet techs in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's like a scholarship or, you know, something that incentivizes. Do we even have the academic programs in Maine to produce the workforce we need to increase vets?
No, we don't. Veterinary technicians, we do have schools here that can produce very fine veterinary technicians and do. But in terms of veterinarians, the closest one is down in Massachusetts, Tufts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it's hugely expensive.
Yeah.
And folks are looking, you know, when they come out of school, if they have a lot of debt, they're going to go to a place that has higher rates of pay.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I know Maine has looked at some pieces of legislation to, you know, get some debt forgiveness for veterinarians that come in and practice in Maine for X number of years, perhaps, or, you know, some other incentives. And I think it's a very much a topic that needs to be discussed because we do not have enough capacity in the state to address. Maine is usually Maine and Vermont are the top two cat-owning states in the country.
What kind of states?
Cat-owning states.
Oh, I had heard about that a while ago.
Over half of households in both states have cats. Down to, like, I think Hawaii is the least cat-owning, and they're down maybe 19% of households consider, you know, that they have an owned cat. Hawaii has lots of outdoor cats that people don't consider their own. But for up here, or for nationally, Maine and Vermont are the top two.
I want to talk about values. So I've had the opportunity to see you at work, both like coming in and being there with my family and just being like another person walking through your door in partnership with some of the things you've done with the chamber. I think of the Uplift LA event, which is where we finally closed the deal on Moose and brought Moose home. But I think about your golden paws. I think about what I've gotten to witness in, you know, some of the fundraising and the walks and the events that you do. And I've gotten to see you with your staff. And when I think about you as a leader, it just comes across to me that you are someone who leads from a value-placed, kind of value-centered work. And I want to explore that. I've got my own thoughts on what I think what I think about you and your values, which, like, spoiler alert, is great, and I think very highly of both. But what core values guide your leadership at the Humane Society, and how do you keep those front and center when work gets tough?
Positivity and kindness is a big one, or two, for me. And not, you know, whitewashing everything to make it positive, but trying to always find the good, or, you know, find some sort of positive aspect of it. Because not everything that happens at the shelter is positive. Yeah. We see bad things, there's sad things, there's cruel things, you know, and sometimes it's really tough. But the positivity can be the fact that that animal is now with us and getting the care that it needs, or, you know, that people came together to help. And then there's people who will speak up on behalf of that animal. There's always something that you can pull out and focus on and not let that negativity drag you down, because it just infects everything, and it just spreads. And it's a lot harder for some than others. I think that's just sort of naturally my inclination, and I recognize that that's not the case for some. And they really just gravitate towards that negativity and the bad that happens. So really just trying to, you know, put a different spin on it, or just call out, hey, you know, yes, that's horrible, but just make sure that you're also seeing that this is happening too. And then just trying to be as kind and understanding to others as possible. Listening, hearing their concerns, trying to find ways to help them in ways that, you know, aren't outside of our mission, but, you know, are trying to address their specific needs, because everyone's coming with a different background and different areas of focus for themselves.
None of that surprises me, because you're one of the kindest people I know, and it shows up just in every it's how you go about the work that you do, and it is, I think, fundamental to who you are. And I love that as being one of your answers. You also said understanding. And one of the things that I would have noted about you is that you're not judgmental. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the things that you talked about, like empathy and compassion, are what helps you be mm-hmm. non-judgmental. Mm-hmm. But I've seen you faced with really tough situations, and there's never judgment in the way that you talk to somebody who's surrendering an animal. You lead in a way that your staff also embodies that. And I just want to reflect back to you that however you might name that as a value, I don't know what the opposite of being judgmental, like not being judgmental, if there's a nice summary word for that from a value list. But
right.
But I think that that's something else that you really embody and is the summation of some of those other pieces of kindness and empathy and compassion. And maybe it came from your animal control officer days. I don't know. But it's just something that I think permeates from you in who you are and how I see you move through and lead in the work that you do, and I will say is not universal. Mm-hmm. That is nowhere near a universal value. In fact, it becomes more and more endangered every day. And mm-hmm. how do you do that? Because some of the stuff you face is really hard.
Yeah, you know, it. I appreciate that. Thank you. And it's an area of tough. You know, it's a discussion point that we're having at the shelter this very moment, because it's very easy. It slips in.
Yeah.
Even when you're not intending it, it's just in a word that you use, or the energy you're bringing to, you know, a discussion with someone or interaction with someone. And, you know, it's like, you don't have to be best friends with everybody that walks through the door, right. But you got to treat them with respect mm-hmm. and listen to them and try to find a way to help, because ultimately what we're doing is we're helping the animal. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's our job. We need to be there, but we can't help them without at least being open and you know, engaging with the person to really find out what's happening. You know, can we suggest something that would help you keep that pet in the home? Or has this bond broken to the extent that surrender is really the right thing here? But you're not going to know unless you can actually talk with them and listen to what they have to say. And if they feel like you're judging them.
Yeah. You don't get very far in the conversation.
They're not going to give you the real answers. They're going to tell you what they think you want to hear so that they can leave and not feel that way anymore. And it's not going to serve anybody. It's not serving them. It's not serving us. And ultimately, it's not helping that animal, because we want good information to help them find a new home.
Well, so there is dozens, if not hundreds, of leaders across this county who I think would aim to do what you do in their own respective fields with their own respective population of choice and mission focus. How do you support a culture that does that? It is one thing to put it on the wall. Mm-hmm. It's another thing to say, guys, we don't judge. It is a completely separate thing to actually achieve a universal culture and standard of volunteers, mm-hmm. of employees, yeah. that actually embody that. So, like, is it training? Is it simply modeling? Like, you don't just announce it on the floor, go back into your office with Mr. Christmas and hope right. it worked out well.
right.
Right? Like,
right.
You,
yeah.
you're,
no,
and,
you
and you're doing it. Whatever it is, you are doing it. Tell us some of what that takes.
Well, I mean, I very much appreciate that because I feel like it's
never, intentional.
It's never, we're never there. There's always work
it's
to
always,
be done.
That's it's always, the, yeah. Just,
it's constant because mm-hmm. even if, you know, someone new comes in, I think one thing that we, is a challenge because we get job applicants who are coming in that love to work with animals.
Of
and,
course.
And they need to enjoy working with animals. That's
yeah.
what we do. You've got to be comfortable with them. You've got to be really get that satisfaction from working with them. But if someone comes in and says, oh, I want to work for you, I love animals and I hate people.
People are part and parcel
people,
in your work.
You need to enjoy yeah. working with people too.
Yeah.
And if you only love animals and you cannot stand people, this is not the place for you,
yeah.
no matter how it may seem.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Yeah.
It can never be. So I think from the get-go, mm-hmm. Finding those folks that have that understanding, can work with people, can have conversations, and can approach things without that level of, you know, emotional baggage and judgment that we often bring
yeah.
is really important. You know, training, and something we're trying to do now is figuring out ways to reward the bright spots
yeah.
and really call those out so that we start to build on those and
yeah.
see more of those and really celebrate those. You know, like we say, you know, a return is not a bad thing. If an animal goes home and it wasn't a good fit for whatever reason, mm-hmm. it could be that the animal acts differently than it did in the shelter and we didn't know.
Yeah.
It's not a failure for that animal to come back. It just wasn't a good match. And I would rather have that animal come back to us
yeah.
than that family try to make it work. Everybody's miserable. Things aren't working well.
Yeah.
Just come back. Now we know more about that dog or cat, how they acted in the home. We know more about what you're really looking for.
Yeah.
And now we can say, oh, mm-hmm. this one's actually better for you. Try this one out. And it's not a bad thing.
In my single years, that's how I describe dating.
you
don't know what
out.
You
don't
want.
Know.
You are just spending time identifying the things that you don't want and where your real line of like, this is something I cannot live with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I can accept whether I like it or not, because it comes with these other things of which I actually mm-hmm. are really
that I really want.
To me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Congratulations. Yeah. You've just described dating.
This is dating. It is. I mean, it is, you know, we try as much as we try to matchmake.
Yeah.
It's still just a point in time conversation.
Yeah.
And all we're hearing is what the person is telling us, which sometimes, mm-hmm. you know, are they 100% honest with themselves? Maybe
that
sometimes
part.
Not.
I mean, even the folks who you are confident are being honest with you, it mm-hmm. does not matter if they've not been able to be honest with you. And this is true in work relationships. This is true. I mean, I think your mechanic would probably say it's true. Like, you say you get the oil regularly changed, mm-hmm. and I bet you'll believe it, but it turns out,
right?
Right? Like, being able to be honest with oneself is
yeah.
the fundamental thing that all other things will be built from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 You know, I mean, hey, if you are one who, you know, doesn't want to be at the vet every, you know, every other month, then it's okay to say that I want an animal that doesn't have any current medical concerns. Like,
yeah.
that's okay. You know, even if that cat caught your eye, well, that cat's got, you know, kidney issues or, you know, whatever it may be. So just think about something else. You know,
yeah.
maybe this little other kitty over here that didn't quite pique your interest initially
is going to be
you
your
know,
best friend.
Think about this as being, you know, it's going to be the better fit for your family.
Yeah.
Or can you really take on that large dog? Even if you grew up with large dogs, maybe your lifestyle right now, it's just not going to work well. And this little guy might be a better fit for you.
So I was prejudiced against small dogs for a very part of, large part of my life. This is another piece of coming clean. And I say this looking at Mark, who's also a small dog owner these days.
I went through the same thing.
Right. You had some self-ownership.
285-pound labs before I got Nugget.
Right.
And he changed my perception of small 100%. Dogs 100%.
100%. I mean, I believe that there was, you know, a point in my younger, less educated, less embodying all of Katie's good values stage in my life where I referred to small dogs as like ankle biters and rat dogs, like very not kind,
right?
Things. And then I wound up with a Shih-Poo. A careful pronunciation there, because if you're too quick with it, it can get off the trails really quickly. It's a Shih Tzu Poodle mix. She's like 14, 15. She's a little chunky right now. She originally was like 13, 14 pounds. And I could not believe I found myself with a small dog. I don't know if I could ever go back now. I'm transformed as a pet owner. And I understand the perception that other folks have of small dogs. But man, once you try, I love my little dog. Nugget, right? Lovable. Little, like, armpit creature. Like,
game changer.
In. Here's my last question.
Okay.
Before we go into reflection. And this one's a tough one.
Okay. I've been,
but it is meant, and I have faith in you. Let me couch this. Okay. You have named that you have not only the desire, but the ability to find the good in even the hardest moments. One example that you use specifically is, at least the animal's now with us, which is probably something you use to console yourself on some of the hardest surrenders.
Right.
All right, so here's this question that I believe that you will amaze us all with. And if not, we'll edit it out.
Okay.
Because I love a podcast. What gives you hope right now about the future of animal welfare?
Well, I mean, I actually think that one's a pretty easy one.
Oh, thank God.
Because...
I was really trying. I swear.
There's never a place that I go or a situation that I'm in when I don't, if I say what I do, that people are like, oh my goodness, I have this animal that blah, 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 I love and this and that, whether it's one that they currently have or, you know, one they had. People love animals.
Yeah.
So there's always hope that animals are going to find the best place because there's so many people out there who love them and care for them and prioritize their welfare. And there are, yep, there are bad people, but the vast majority love and share the passion to take care of them to varying degrees, but it's there. So I think that one's a pretty easy one.
Oh, good. I'm going to take that hope home with me. So in general, there are more good people than bad, as evidenced by their love for animals.
I believe so. All walks of life. You know, I mean, we as an organization, you know, we try to, you know, when I worked for Humane Society of the United States, it was always like, we're a big tent organization. Pet loving, animal welfare crosses all political spectrum, you know, race, class, and, you know, any other spectrum that you can think of, there are pet lovers
with it
on every single piece of that in every area. So we just try to be focused on those animals and how can we help you help the animals, and other stuff just sometimes takes a little bit of a back burner to that.
I love that you have that hope. I share it. I'm not saying that I don't mean that to sound condescending. I realize that maybe was how it sounded. It's just really nice to hear someone else who holds hope at the center, because it can be hard. There's been some hard months. I think about some of the headlines that I've seen you and your team in the back of the news channel broadcast around a house with complex issues and many animals. You know, and there's work that I'm engaged in that have really hard moments, really impactful moments. And I also approach things with hope, and not everybody has that universal gene, and not everybody loves us who does. I would go so far as just like, all right, Pollyanna, enough with your joy. This has maybe been heard around the office once or twice. So it's just really nice to talk to someone else who also has that hope and sees that hope. And the next time my hope gets dimmed in any way, I will remember the animal lovers and pull hope from that, because I think that's right. I'll think of you in Nugget, Mark.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yep.
And Sherry as the spare human. And how great she was to introduce the two of you. No, that's right. That's right. Thanks for sharing, Hope.
Yeah,
I appreciate absolutely. That. Before I go into my reflection, Mark, is there any questions, follow-ups that you...
More comments, really.
Yeah.
I'm currently trying to repair my credibility with Katie.
How can I help you in this moment?
Do you remember why?
No.
Burnt Ends Barbecue.
So
you were doing a fundraiser there.
Yeah.
And Katie and Sherry and I were at the bar, and Katie and Donna were our guests.
We were the
celebrity
guest bartenders,
celebrity
right?
servers.
Celebrity, oh yes.
I love where this is going.
I proceeded to tell Katie that Sherry and I were vegetarians as we were eating pulled pork sandwiches.
Saying this to a vegan, and I didn't say anything. I just sort of...
You didn't say anything,
The
Katie.
Look on your face was priceless.
Was it vegan pork that you were looking at?
As I'm saying this, I'm putting my sandwich down and looking at it going, oh my God. Katie looks at us going, I noticed.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So...
But then you redeemed yourself by having a wonderful conversation about soy curls.
That's true.
With me, and
yes.
We hooked Donna in to trying
yes.
them. So,
all right.
you didn't.
Okay, good.
You right in the moment.
I feel a whole lot better.
I feel like you eating a pork anything is a pretty rare occurrence.
It, trust me.
All the stars aligned, and you decided to announce you were a vegetarian.
It was in that moment.
It was just ridiculous.
I love that this is your redeeming moment.
We eat meat like 5 times a year,
yeah.
And that was one of them. And as I'm eating it, I'm telling
maybe
Katie I'm a vegetarian.
Maybe you just don't tell the label in that moment on those 5 times.
It's just poor timing, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're just pulling drinks from behind the bar, pretending not to notice.
I was just minding my own business.
I would say that is what shows you are an actual bartender, because that is part of that particular gig. Have you ever bartended before in your life?
No.
Yeah,
no.
That's the whole experience.
Yeah,
I was a server
yeah.
for many years, and you just smile real nice and pretend the person in front of you really does know best and didn't say something.
Oh, she did. Yeah, she smiled.
Nailed it. Did you tip her well?
Oh, yeah.
All right. That was your redeeming moment. That was the real redeeming moment that day.
Smiling from ear to ear, but you could tell in her eyes. She's like, you're full of crap.
I love that. I love that. Anything else you want to redeem?
That's hilarious.
No,
I think that's I'm here for another redemption story if you've got one in your pocket. Katie or otherwise for that matter.
I know.
Throw it all on the table.
Yeah, one of these days. But I've had the privilege of working with Katie and her staff on a few radiothons and fundraisers. Mm. And there are, as far as Katie is concerned, I can't think of a better advocate and ambassador for the animals in our state than she is, and her staff as well.
Yeah.
For the radiothons, I got to go to the Humane Society and interview staff and volunteers, I think maybe 15 to 20 people in an afternoon, you know, and we just funneled them in as they found a free couple of minutes to come talk to me. And every one of them, they love what they do. They love animals, obviously. Mm-hmm. And they are some of the most caring, kind, and selfless people I've ever met in my life. And I think that's a reflection of your leadership.
Right. That's the piece that I was trying to lift up, is that it is one thing to be that. It is another thing to have a couple of people on your team who also somehow have those qualities. But when you universally have a team of staff and volunteers who embody those values, there is something intentional happening with a high consistency to get there. And as an organizational leader, I can tell you that is not accidental. Mm-hmm. There is real meaningful work that is not operations, it's not bill paying, it's not ordering, it's not managing the care of the animals, that you are tending to your humans to ensure that they can be those people for those pets, for those surrenderers, for those adopters. And that's been my experience too, Mark, that I just think is incredible. And Katie is just like, I mean, you're humble and I appreciate that about you, but just hear from two of us, and I can't countless others, that's visible. And that's, as an organization leader, you are doing something with a high level of intentionality and a high level of consistency to get there. And that's really just, it's something I admire. It's something I aim to be as a leader. And I can tell you that it's, you don't get a day off from that.
No. You don't get a day off from them.
No. Doesn't mean that we don't mess up.
Right.
It means that like you're leaning into it even more on the days that you mess up because part of it is owning it and making it better and repairing harm and
I remember a couple of times during the radiothon we'd have guests come in and we'd talk about Katie, the executive director, you know, and her goals and they say, "Oh, is she here?" Like, yeah, she is, but she's in a cat costume out on Center Street collecting donations. If you're ever wondering what kind of executive director she is and if whether or not she leads by example, I can't think of a better way to explain it than that.
I actually like being the cat.
I know you do. I know you. I never have to guess
and
which
maybe
one you
that's
are.
That's the point, right? It's fun. Yeah, I mean, I think you have to... Yeah, I mean, you as a leader, you have to understand all the roles that your team is performing and doing and be willing to jump in where you're needed. I mean, none of us operate in a situation where we've got so many staff that there's always someone just sitting around waiting for something to do. I mean, what reality is that?
Not one I've ever
lived. No, not one. So, you've got to jump in and pitch in and just be willing to do it, get the work done.
And, wow. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I certainly wasn't expecting to come in and...
We like to keep you on your toes.
That's right.
Shower you in embarrassing.
I appreciate it. Thank you. It's wonderful to hear because when you're in it, it never feels like enough.
Yeah.
You know, you're always like, okay, you know, I did that wrong or that wasn't great. I was not happy with the outcome of that one. You know, what could we be doing better? How can we be making this happen? And how can we support staff? Because it is. It's a challenging field.
Yeah.
There's a lot of burnout.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the days that are the chaos days that you just try to roll with the punches.
Yeah.
And some people really struggle with that. Even if they love animals, they don't necessarily have that level of comfort in taking what comes. And so you get a lot of burnout. You get a lot of compassion fatigue. People taking that on and really internalizing the suffering that you see. So it's difficult to support, and each person needs something different.
So Katie, the part where you said sometimes it feels like you're always working on those things and oh golly, thanks. The fact that you're working on them, the fact that you don't think you're done is the type of leader you are. Yeah. Is that in and of itself? Because I can guarantee you the cultures that aren't like that, the teammates who aren't like that happen when the leaders that I talk to come into a room and say, "No, I'm great. I nailed that. I've been in my career 25 years. I figured that out a long time ago. It's already, I've arrived. I've achieved." Those are the folks who like the culture isn't there. They don't embody those values. The team doesn't embody those values. It is that, you know, insistence on not being done, on always having some edge to polish, some space to grow. It's that mindset and the way you live that is the definition of the type of leader you are and why you get those results, that culture, those things. And I just hear, not only do I hope you are hearing that, but I hope our listeners are hearing that, because I really think it is, it's what I see is what differentiates our guests. I'm selective our guests in the first place. I'm not interviewing those people on our show for a reason. But like it's when I see the organizations or the businesses that are having impact, are seeing growth, are retaining their employees, that are that fundamentally the common thread, regardless of the mission or the business model or type or the age or gender or race or title of the, fundamentally, it's just, they don't feel like they're ever done. They're always in a learning mindset. And they just navigate with a humbleness that, you know, you also embody.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I greatly appreciate it.
Keep doing incredible things.
Well, keep learning.
Yeah. See, that's
keep trying new things.
Don't be done.
Don't be done. No.
How boring would that be anyway?
That would be so boring.
I wouldn't want to be done.
No.
I don't. Mark's never done either. No. You're always polishing a set, adding booms, doing fun things. Yeah,
figuring out new equipment.
That's right. See, that's my, those are the people that I like to surround myself with. And that's the type of organization I like to create that does amazing things.
Yeah.
Here's our looking back, leading forward segment. If you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, and given that you have been always this person, you didn't come to this career, you just grew into this career. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, is this your 9-year-old self? Is this your 14-year-old self? You get to picture that. But if you could give one piece of advice to your younger self, or anyone really, starting in animal welfare or community work, what's the advice that you would give?
I think just don't be afraid to try it. Yeah. You know, if there's something that you think you want to do, don't let doubts or fears hold you back, or what you, you know, your perception that someone's going to think negatively of you, or like, ooh, just try it. If you don't like it, then you don't need to keep doing it, but you got to at least give yourself the opportunity to see whether it's something you want to pursue.
I love that. I'm going to keep trying.
So that means we'll be seeing you on stage at CLT pretty soon.
That's what it maybe does mean.
Maybe.
I'm really looking for the next steampunk anything.
Yeah,
anything. I will personally call you and drive you to auditions.
You wouldn't be able to keep me away from that.
Good.
Yes. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Any parting words from you? Anything you want to lift up?
Well, I think the element of hope. You know, it is there. Some days it's harder to find than others, but there's always something that you can find. And just ask people if you need a smile and you're out in the world, ask someone about their pet.
Because they're
almost always going to have a story that they will be smiling and happy, and you'll just see the joy in their face telling you that story. And that's lovely.
Ugh, I'm going to do that. Do you just say, tell me about your animals?
Yeah.
Love that. Yeah. And then you get to hear about the nuggets and the, what's your orange cat's name? Leroy?
Bad Leroy Brown.
Oh, that's good. See, I'm glad I asked. And we're all smiling. It works like a charm.
It does. You know,
Do you sing it when he's being naughty?
Yes.
Do you go full name?
You have to.
Much like a mom with middle names.
Yes.
You're like,
yep. Yep.
I love that.
Leroy Brown.
So now that the weather's nicer, when I pick up Sherry from work, I'll bring the dogs with me. Mm. And as soon as I drive up and she sees them, smile from ear to ear.
It's a game changer.
It
yeah.
is. Yeah. It is.
And she's a nurse. Yep. She has long days. She has hard days. Mm-hmm. But if she sees the dogs coming up to pick her up for work, instantly better.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just... Okay. If the theme of this show on my end is I'm so sorry, Chad, I'm just going to end with that note, because I think it is starting to feel that way. He's really lovely to animals and lovely to me in ways that I don't know either of us fully deserve. But my favorite is when he's outside with the dog when I get home. And I don't have to wait to come inside, but the dog comes to me. And those are the days that I like just swing my legs out and keep the door open. And I just have a dog moment before Chad. Just have a dog moment. Let the day wash away from me. There's a good cuddle in the car seat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, right.
Yep.
Hi, babe.
Now, right. Yeah. Now I'm ready to move on to
because dogs abortion. Like pets absorb. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's a, and they don't seem to have a limit.
No.
You can have, when my dad was going through cancer, Stacey was a constant companion for me and for him and some of those. And, just the weight of really hard days for many, many days in a row. Mm-hmm. And boy, that dog would wake up fresh every day and could take a little bit more of my heartache from me each day. And never. And I don't feel like the dog ever got depressed. Stacey never really seemed to take that on.
No.
Pets are amazing. Yeah.
I don't know if your dad shared this with you, but when we had him on the podcast... and for folks who aren't familiar, at Lydia Media is named after Lydia, who is a gorgeous, big, yellow lab. Mm-hmm.
Friendly, rambly dog.
Yep. She was in the studio at the time with Pam and I and your dad, and he was talking about his cancer treatment, and he started getting emotional. Mm-hmm. Lydia sensed that. She walked over and put her head on his lap.
Aww.
And he loved it.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dogs are just...
They're the best.
Yeah.
Cats are great too.
Yes.
Yep. You know, in different ways, they express it in different ways, but you know, they're there too. You know, they give us so much.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I feel like my dog takes the emotion, and my cat makes me laugh.
Right.
The cat's like, "Now I'm not going to do the soft stuff, but I'm going to smack you in the face with my tail and make you think about something else."
Mm-hmm.
Also effective.
It is. It's just,
and it's nice to have both.
It is.
Mm-hmm. You can pick and choose what you're up for in any given day.
Right.
Thanks, Katie.
Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any anytime in any way that we can be of service for any piece of your work, whether it's amplifying the good work you do or policy that you're working on.
Thank you.
Love to hear about it. Love to share it with folks. For folks who are listening, check out all things, make a donation, adopt, foster, you know, make your pitch and tell them where to find out more.
Yeah. So, gahumane.org, you can see our upcoming events. We have a whole ton.
Yeah,
the summer is very busy.
Yeah.
We've got a golf tournament. We've got our Golden Paw Awards, all kinds of small stuff, paint nights, and just fun things to get people out and about and loving their animals. Adoption, absolutely. And then volunteering and fostering.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you may have for time or talents, more than likely we can put it to use to help animals. And then donations of any type. Keep our doors open and keep us doing what we do.
I love that. Thanks again.
Thank you.